Hello, you're listening to the This Is The Way Phase 4 podcast, and I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo. Today's discussion is about the sixth and final episode of Hawkeye, available for streaming on Disney Plus December 22nd, 2021. Any Marvel Studios content released as of today's podcast is fair game for discussion, so consider this your only spoiler warning. The Marvel This Is The Way Phase 4 giveaway is now complete. I have an announcement on that for you at the end of the episode today after we wrap up coverage of Hawkeye, nice and neat with a bow. Our Twitter at and Instagram handle are the same, at The Way Phase 4. And if you'd like to visit our Facebook page to leave a comment, facebook.com/TheWayPhase4. You can also email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com.
Now tell me this. If I send an email, where would I put the stamp?
We got you now, bro.
Episode 6 is titled, So This Is Christmas. The full description on Disney Plus for the episode. Clint and Kate's partnership is put to the test as they face the devastating consequences of exposing the conspiracy. The brief description just replaces put to the test with tested and then omits devastating from the full description. The director for episode 6 is Rhys Thomas, who handled episodes 1 and 2 before handing it off to Bert and Bertie for 3, 4, and 5. Writing credits go to Jonathan Igla and Elisa Clement. There is another previously on segment when you start streaming, as with episodes 2 through 5. The runtime says 1 hour 2 minutes, but Disney Plus includes the recaps and credits. I think it's better to find out how long you need if you skip all that. In this case, I counted from the time I first heard audio after the Marvel title sequence went to black to the Hawkeye end title sequence. Episode 6 then has about 48 minutes and 40 seconds of action, and then mid-credits, Marvel Studios decided to gift us with a 4.5-minute Broadway number, the one Clint and family left in Episode 1 from the fictional play Rogers the Musical. I'm sure they thought this was a nice treat, but I'll save my thoughts on it until after the episode discussion. Compared to the last couple episodes, this one is slightly longer, but it actually runs comparable to an hour-long episode of regular TV.
Are you making it so tough on us, bro?
Hello, I'm Steve Lascalzo for Cufflinks.com. December is a month of giving, whether it's your time, charity, or gifts to loved ones. If you need ideas to close out 2021 with some class, try visiting cufflinks.com. There, you'll find a small, family-run business with over 3,000 accessories available from the biggest brands and fandoms. Cufflinks, yes, of course. But you can find ties, tie bars, lapel pins, shirt studs, socks, and much, much more. The Marvel offerings will amaze you. Iron Man, Captain America, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Black Panther, Deadpool, Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers, Thor, Spider-Man, X-Men. You can choose bright, colorful accessories or wear something so subtle even Hawkeye would have to look twice to notice. You don't have to have the need for cufflinks to appreciate the quality, and you just might find yourself considering that bow tie or deciding between gift sets when you take a look at the items. There's more than Marvel. DC, Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, Star Trek, sports leagues like MLB, NFL, NHL, collegiate offerings, and of course Star Wars. In fact, just like our Star Wars themed podcast, we can offer you 15% off your purchase. You just have to enter THEWAY15 in the coupon code box at checkout. You don't need to bid against Armand and Jack at a secret black market auction. You can dazzle a crime kingpin or take the focus off your 10 rings of power. You can look marvelous while wearing Marvel. Cufflinks.com has you covered, no matter which universe you call home. Check out Cufflinks.com today. Cufflinks come up big in this episode, actually. In fact, the guy we're going to see first wears them pretty much regularly. The finale starts with a flashback. At the end of Episode 5, Kate and Clint were in Grill's apartment, and Yelena sent a text that showed Eleanor meeting with Kingpin. This scene that we see play out is that meeting. He walks in. Eleanor is there already, and she's oddly comfortable in the meeting, but perhaps it's because of the successful partnership she's had with him since her husband died. It seems our hopes of Derek being a good guy are dashed, because Eleanor is speaking candidly here, and we find out that she wasn't the one seeking out this arrangement. She did her best when faced with Derek owing a lot of money to Fisk before he died. It is Eleanor who is responsible for Armand's death, and she says she took care of him so she could have hired someone to do it. I don't think she stabbed him, but she had him killed, so she's embraced the lifestyle. She admits here to framing Jack for the business dealings of Sloan Limited, a guy that is her fiancé. Now that Kate is home, she wants out. Eleanor has been working hard to pay off Derek's debt. In fact, she says she's paid it back tenfold, but that success is actually a bit of a problem for her now. There's no way this crime lord is going to make easy money and then just let someone cut themselves out of the business. She wants to exit the relationship and admits to keeping copies of their dealings somewhere as a safeguard, although I don't think Wilson Fisk cares one bit about that. He gets angry, tells her, take a minute, rethink things. But Eleanor, cool as a cucumber, stares him down and leaves.
I don't need a minute.
Vincent D'Onofrio has this eye twitch thing going that he's doing in the scenes. It's very unsettling in close-ups, at least to me. I'm not sure if that's a mannerism that he affected for Daredevil 2, but it works here. The scene transitions to Kate watching this meeting on her phone. She tells Clint that Yelena sent it, and her mom is the one who hired her to kill him. The realization is starting to set in for Kate. If that meaning what we saw is what she saw on her phone, she now knows that her dad was indebted to the mob. Her mom probably felt trapped into the arrangement. She's been keeping her safe all these years and has been allowing her to train to become what she is. Unfortunately, Kate trained too well, and her mom wanting out is to keep her out of Kingpin's way. Kate is shocked, tries calling, and at first I thought, wow, that's a really bad idea because her mom might find out where she is, but she probably could already know if she wanted to with all her security tech. So Clint tries calming her and says they're going to help her mom. Kate, to her credit, tells Clint it's her mess and he should go home to family. Barton admits something to her.
Kate, you're my partner. Your mess is my mess.
He vows to see it through. We're taken back to that office where Eleanor and Kingpin met, only this time it's Maya coming to see her uncle. In episode 5, we saw that Clint's words to Maya sunk in and she questioned Kazi. She knows. He knows she knows, and since Kazi's in the room before Maya got there, Maya must suspect that Kingpin must also now know. He's not tipping his hand, though, and she doesn't either. She tells Uncle that she got a little carried away, she's come to her senses, she's not going to go chasing after ghosts anymore. The scene plays very tense, especially with the sign language going on. When she goes to leave, Kingpin puts his hand on her shoulder, and what should be a tender moment actually ends up being awkward and foreboding. He tells her that he loves her in ASL, and she signs it back and leaves. This face-to-face meeting actually sets up a scene later in the episode, too. Fisk knows something is up. He turns and summarizes his thinking to Kazi. The Ronin's running around again, and Avengers looking into his operation. Eleanor thinks she can just quit, and his Maya has turned on them. That's right, he does know. He gets in Kazi's face to let him know what's important.
The people need to be reminded that the city belongs to me.
Next up is a short scene of Clint and Kate riding the subway, and it really serves one simple purpose. It sets up a montage, a way too dangerous Arrowhead-making montage. Kate breaks out a label maker, which is kind of funny, and I guess comes from the comics, but it makes sense, since she's not used to all the dangerous arrows and what they do. But I don't think we see her stop one time to read any of the labels when she pulls them out of her quiver later. It would have been nice to maybe see her fumbling through and then find the arrow thanks to the label maker. One of them didn't really need a label. It was the red PIM arrow. So the blue one enlarged that arrow. The red one's clearly going to shrink something, right? The arrows we see needing labels, we're going to see almost all of them, if not all of them, used in the big fight later. There's an airbag one, a freeze one, icebreaker, flash bomb. We see ball bearings, wires, magnets, gas darts, tranquilizers being used. This serves a purpose, I think. Kate learns here how to eventually make her own trick arrows. The only question I have, though, is if all these tools and things, are they actually at Grill's house, or do we skip over the shopping part of this? I know he makes his LARP stuff, but Clint must have had a kit stash somewhere. Some of the heads have Stark on them. Then the montage winds down, and it gets to the talk. It's the talk that heroes always have, where Clint asks, "Are you ready for this?" And Kate answers, and she has to show that she understands to pass the test, and she does. She recounts for Clint what made him a hero in her eyes. It was the Battle of New York. We saw it to open the series. A human being without superpowers overcame aliens.
"You showed me that being a hero isn't just for people who can fly or shoot lasers out of their hands. It's for anyone who is brave enough to do what's right no matter the cost." "I'm ready."
And finally, it's party time. The Trustabroke trucks are out in full force. The tracksuits are going to be covering exits. Kazi's in charge. He's the sniper somewhere in the 623 Fifth Avenue building across the way. The Saks building and Ice Rink are in between. Kate and Clint are dressed to the nines and head into the party at 30 Rock. Clint wants to teach Kate how to spot danger, how to spot assets. And the first thing Kate mentions is a callback. Gary is back. He's yelling at Wendy. Yes, our LARP friends have apparently been hired on as service for the event. And how is that possible? Well, that one line where Eleanor said Kate should help plan the event because she's good at that sort of thing, Kate must have had them put on the list. Wendy is serving champagne. Orville is there. He's the coat check guy. Grills and Missy are on hors d'oeuvres. We then spot Jack, who's not only at the party, but wearing a sword. Just out of jail after being under suspicion for killing someone with a sword. I don't know what he was thinking. Kate says maybe it's to reinforce his claim of innocence.
"It's a weird flex, but sure."
"Hey, Jack, I thought you were in jail."
And then Armand the Seventh comes up and makes chit-chat, and it really doesn't do anything, and I just wonder why we're getting all these callbacks, but not really important information, at least for Jack. I was really disappointed that we didn't find out that Jack was at the very least a vigilante. He clearly has a history with the Duquesne family. He is a Duquesne. He even gets a jab at little Armand for peeing his pants in the Hamptons. It kind of cheats us out of a deep backstory, though. Armand the Sixth bailed him out, which is either his nephew or brother, and it's the Seventh's father. It just really was disappointing not to hear more about Jack and have him be more important. We then get a scene with Kazi setting up his rifle, he's scoping the party, and then Kate gets her earpiece from Clint. We then start to see the LARP squad in action. Orville asks for Yelena's coat. She enters the party, and she walks right by, and I guess poor Orville doesn't pick up on the blonde with the Russian accent. He doesn't alert anyone, but maybe he wasn't told about her. Maybe they forgot that Yelena was still after Clint. I doubt that, but it's possible. She's wearing bright green, hardly inconspicuous, which seems ridiculous to me. She's an assassin. Wear black. You don't blend in. Then Eleanor arrives, and as soon as she gets there, Kazi takes aim, but Kate pulls aside her mom to the catering area. She shows her the video from the phone. Eleanor doesn't pull a punch, doesn't even try to hide it. She tells her that her dad owed Fisk money. Jack comes in, and again, I thought we might get a reveal here, but no, Eleanor shuts him down, tells them both she's got everything under control. Except Clint nonchalantly stops in front of a window, which is something I just don't feel like a person trained in covert ops would do in this situation. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong about that kind of awareness. He does, though, spot the laser sight through the triple pane glass and in the champagne flutes, though. And Kazi kicks off the party by shooting. Once the bullets start flying, the teams go into action. Clint has the LARP squad get people out of the building. Kate tells Mom to stay put, but she doesn't, leaving Jack alone. Again? I felt, here it is. We're going to find out he's the swordsman from the comics.
I feel like I'm missing something here. Okay, Jack. This is it. It's your time.
No, just a guy who wants to be a hero and who likes swords. Clint gives some orders to the LARP squad and gets his gear from Orville, who had it in the coat check area. Wendy and Missy kill the lights, leaving Kazi without clear targets. Kate spots Yelena and tails her. I seem to remember Yelena telling her to stay out of her way, though.
Oh, and Kate Bishop. Do not get in my way again.
You know, Yelena is still on a mission. The scenes that follow between Kate and Yelena. Let's put it this way. This is the new Hawkeye and Black Widow, right? They have to have the same type of platonic rivalry and respect as Clint and Natasha. If they weren't going for that in the writer's room, they lucked into it. But I'm pretty sure this was by design. There are a couple scenes with the LARP squad and Clint firing a smoke arrow into the sniper nest Kazi is working from. But the time we get with Kate and Yelena is great. There's even some meta lines from them.
Stop making me like you.
I'm sorry, I can't help it. That was really fun. Bye.
If they don't do anything with them, I think it's a missed opportunity. Haley Steinfeld just had her 25th birthday, and Florence Pugh is about to turn 26 in a couple weeks, so they're about the same age. They're both experienced actors, and they have that buddy chemistry needed to pull off a Marvel movie. Do something, and announce it quick.
What? This is crazy.
Yelena goes out the window with a tether and rappels down the side of the building toward Clint, but while the elevator told her what floor, Yelena apparently had a sixth sense on what direction and window Clint would head. Maybe that's something she figured by figuring that Clint would have learned the same type of tactics as a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that she would as a widow, but it's kind of weak for me. Clint manages to avoid Yelena for the time being, but Kate decides to go down the quick way too. She picks up the bolas she threw at Yelena to use as a belay device, and she avoids serious injury going down the wire, and it affords her an opportunity for a hero landing. And it affords us another callback because she tells Clint the tracksuit mafia's here and some attacker, but Thomas, whatever, the guy that asked about his girlfriend, he's got a gun in his hand. He takes the opportunity to thank Kate for the advice with a girlfriend. And then she says, you know, what's with the gun? So Thomas and his girlfriend went to Maroon 5 instead of Imagine Dragons. Kate takes him out and some of the guys down as well with bolas and martial arts. But a goon takes aim.
I got you now, bro.
Jack!
Hello, sweetie.
We're behind you! Jack, I am so sorry my mom got you put in jail.
Honestly, I'm gonna miss the bro talk. Jack makes a dashing entrance with his sword, and again, maybe we'll get a reveal here that he's been keeping an eye out for her all along. Nope. He's just looking for Eleanor, just like Kate has been. He's totally cool with Kate for being suspicious and being the one who basically convinced Eleanor to frame him. Anyway, meanwhile, Clint's not taking the window, but the bros are on his floor. His idea is to set some explosive charges. How did they know which floor? Well, I would think Kazi informed them when he spotted them from his hide spot. While it's reasonable to think he told them where to go, apparently, he made it all the way down the 623 building, across half block of people fleeing Rockefeller Center into 30 Rock, and then up to the 12th floor, and he beat his guys to Clint. Now, as unrealistic as that is, this gives him and Clint a chance to fight. Kazi overestimates his chances. Clint's able to overcome him, detonate the charges, dropping the 12th floor ceiling and ductwork onto the bros. His plans on leaving safely, though, are ruined by the arrival of more goons, so he takes a running leap, and unfortunately, Yelena's wire catch gets yanked out of the carpet. Somehow, though, he has enough momentum to make it to the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree. I don't know how he did it. I don't know if it's possible. I don't know if it's realistic. But he's safe. The bros, though, were all down one hallway. One trick arrow would have cleared them out. Maybe he just didn't want to take the stairs or take a chance of disabling the elevators with the wrong kind of arrow. I don't know. Kate is on the ground looking for him, and he tells her he's in the tree. She can't really do anything about it right yet, but the LARP squad's there, and then Missy brings her her gear. Kate then takes charge, tells them keep people away from the area, and Wendy makes a comment about Jack not really needing help. There's an amusing little moment where the LARP squad realizes no one is listening to their directions. So they go change, and they're right. People in this Marvel Studios multiverse are conditioned to see people in costumes and assume that they have authority. It's kind of weird, but in this universe, it actually does track for me. What doesn't is why Maya has waited all the way until nighttime to start packing up her things in her apartment. It was an oddly placed scene to me, and not only did it not make sense logic-wise, it wasn't needed, and then it creates a problem. It's the worst kind of scene for me. If she wasn't tailing Kazi from the start, how did she know where he would be? And then why wouldn't she have been waiting and watching if she was going to go at all? And I don't mean just at 30 Rock. I mean, she knew where he was. Showing up mid-action makes no sense. Anyway, Kate takes down some bros with arrows, and then Clint calls out and wonders, hey, where's backup?
We're all gonna die.
I don't know why this, of all things, makes him more pessimistic. Now, the LARP squad starts out just directing people away, then they get in some action with random bros. Grills uses his firefighter carry skills to get Armand the 7th out of there. Kate then fells the upper half of the tree by removing two support wires with one arrow and using an acid arrow on the trunk. Except that's still a long way to fall. Clint is lucky he doesn't get impaled by branches or knocked out cold hitting the ice or the treetopper fall on him. The bros start to converge. Kate comes in, provides some cover, then gets trick arrows from Clint, who finally rips off the tux to reveal his black and purple costume, courtesy of Missy. Remember, earlier in the episode in the elevator, Yelena ripped off Kate's outfit to reveal her costume.
All right, Kate. Let's give them hell.
So they start to make their way out, but the stairs aren't the only way out. Maybe people who haven't been there don't know about the concourse, but they should have been able to escape there underneath instead of up and through the onslaught through the stairway. Anyway, they use just about every kind of arrow you can think of, and that's why they want this cool action scene. They use every arrow, including the Pym Tech Shrink arrow, which is on a Trustabro truck. So they pay off this owl. It had less than 5 seconds of screen time in the tree with Clint. But they won't pay off Jack. And this owl is something that only people in New York City would have remembered probably because there was a story about an owl that came in with the tree that was cut down to be the Rockefeller Christmas tree. Anyway, this owl carries off the shrunken truck. And I don't think, unless the stuff wears off the guys, I don't think there's any hope for them recovering anyway, so they might as well be an owl snack, I guess.
What happens to them now?
I don't know. I'll have to ask Scott about that one.
Kate and Clint head up the stairs after doing all that damage, and Kate hears over comms that her mom is leaving through a side door. She takes off for her, but a gunshot rings out. It makes no sense that a guy with a sniper rifle would give away his position. He could have just readied a shot, and they wouldn't have even known he was there. Kazi apparently is a little antsy. That gives Clint time to pay off the arrow-splitting technique talk with Kate from 2 episodes ago. Clint fires 2 arrows in succession, and the second splits the first in twain.
The first arrow you release just has to be wood. So when you release the second one, it splits it right up the middle.
Kazi somehow catches the middle arrow headed for his throat.
Nice shot!
Honestly, I know it was talked about earlier and they wanted to pay it off, but I just would have eliminated that line from the show. It felt very forced. Before he picks up his rifle to fire again, Yelena takes Clint down, tackling him to the ice. Then Maya heads around the corner on her motorcycle and lays it down into 2 of the goons that are near Kazi. So then Maya and Kazi start their fight. Then Yelena decides it's time to talk and paws hers with Clint, instead of just killing him, which is what she's been trying to do so far the whole episode. we find out that this is indeed the first time Clint has come across Yelena at all, as he says, "Nice to meet you." He tries to convince her that it was Natasha choosing to sacrifice herself on Vormir. Yelena doesn't believe him.
You're pathetic. You're so pathetic.
Maya is likewise trying to reason with Kazi, but he explains he wants this life in the mob. He chose it, and he chooses it still. He blames her for stealing his place. And then we cut to Eleanor trying to make her getaway, but discovering her driver's dead, and the guard that accompanied her gets swatted away by some force. It's Kingpin. He rips the door off, and he starts to reach for Eleanor before Kate intervenes. Now, I think we're supposed to believe that Wilson Fisk has been given some form of super serum. Maybe it was an early version developed in Madripoor. Maybe it made him large and strong and slightly hulkish. Look, the arrow he takes to the chest from Kate does absolutely nothing to him. He also uses the grapple arrow shot at him by Kate to pull her in and knock her down. He takes off his coat, pulls on a cufflink, which must be his signature move, and then he gets plowed into by a car. Eleanor hits him. This is further proof to me that Wilson Fisk had to have taken some kind of super serum. I mean, how do you survive that? Kazi and Maya aren't done, so the scene switches back to them, and Maya is trying to convince Kazi to leave the life behind, but he says he can't walk between two worlds, so either this is just being a coincidental callback to Maya's father, the talk that she had with him about walking between two worlds, or it's a deliberate one from him, from Kazi, to prove to her that he knows what he's doing. So he pulls an arrow from a bro that's downed and tries to stab her, but she turns it on him. I was waiting for her to mimic or echo a move that she saw in a fight, but I'm not sure we ever did see that, beside the time that she was a kid at the karate dojo in the first episode we saw her. She just turns the arrow on him into his stomach, and that seems to be enough to finish him off. He tells her to leave her because Kingpin will come after her. Fisk, though, is now up on his feet after getting plowed through a store window and wall, and he heads straight for Eleanor, who's knocked out in the driver's seat, but Kate fires some kind of barrier arrow to stop him. Kingpin is much, much stronger and a better fighter, and he punches Kate around like a rag doll. This fight is just starting. One just ended with Maya and Kazi, and another continues on the ice. Yelena and Clint fight hand to hand, and Clint is still trying to tell Yelena that her sister sacrificed herself. He seems to be trying to defend himself just enough in hopes she's going to stop and listen, but she isn't ready to accept it.
I fought her for it, but she was better than me.
You should have fought harder.
Back to Kingpin and Kate we go, and he continues to toss her around, and he gets her quiver of arrows, and then he breaks the arrows at the shafts. I don't care how strong you are. Breaking that many arrow shafts at one time altogether is impossible unless you took some super serum. She tries stopping him from going after his mom, but she's not even close to hurting him.
Mind your own business!
Yelena and Clint continue to talk and fight, and Clint continues to make the same case. Natasha sacrificed herself. He was no match for her. He couldn't stop her. He didn't deserve it, but he didn't make the choice. She did. Yelena isn't satisfied and continues to beat him. And Clint, for his part, is letting her. Kate? She's still trying to stop Kingpin from approaching her mom, and we're treated to a payoff of the trick Kate learned from Clint on frozen drink night at Aunt Moira's. Instead of turning off a TV, she uses the bottle cap snap trick to trigger an arrowhead from one of the broken shafts on the ground. She snaps one of Fisk's cufflinks, and it causes an electrical chain reaction, which detonates an explosive arrow, knocking out Wilson Fisk. Kate gets to climb out the window and help her mom, who's waking up in the driver's seat after hitting Fisk with the car. Eleanor actually makes a sound argument to me about protecting Kate, but it's clear she settled into a life of crime, whether pushed into it or not. The police arrive, and Eleanor is surprised that her daughter is letting the police take her away.
Is this what heroes do? Arrest their mothers on Christmas? I'm sorry. I love you, Mom.
There's just one fight left to resolve. Yelena drops her stick and draws a gun. This is Clint's last chance. So he brings out the big guns, or the whistle.
How do you know that?
It's the special whistle between Yelena and Natasha. She's shocked he knows it. This gets through the hard Widow Carapace. Sure, Nat may have mentioned a whistle at one point to a friend. She might have talked about Yelena from time to time to people. Sharing that whistle, though, that secret between those two, she actually heard it sounded out. So someone heard it enough times to be able to mimic it. She knows now that Clint isn't just an Avenger. She knows that he was Natasha's best friend. Now she's beginning to listen.
She made her choice. We're gonna have to find a way to live with that.
I loved her so much.
Me too.
Yelena relents and holsters her gun and even helps Clint Barton to his feet. He puts his hand on her shoulder, kind of like a eerie mirror image of the time that Kingpin put his hand on Maya's shoulder. This time it's sincere, and the other time it was very insincere. Clint tells Yelena he's sorry, and I guess she believes him now. She leaves, and leaves Clint alive. The police search the store where Kate and Fisk had their fight, but Kingpin isn't there anymore. Apparently, the explosion hurt him enough for him to just try to hobble home. A Trust-A-Bro truck pulls up, and he assumes, you know, it's his salvation. Oh, thank goodness. Instead, Maya hops out. Remember that hand on the shoulder? Well, maybe Wilson figured he could talk his way out of it since he never let on that he knew. Unfortunately, she knows.
Sometimes family doesn't see eye to eye.
Unfortunately for him, that is. Maya definitely fires her weapon here, but I don't think there's any chance that she actually kills Wilson Fisk. You don't bring in Kingpin for one episode of a finale with a series for Echo still in, you know, development. You know, this is off screen. So, if we didn't see it, it didn't happen, right? I mean, maybe he's injured, or maybe she fires and he dodges it, or grabs her arm. I don't know. Maybe he's severely injured, but he's not dead, right? Back at Rockefeller Center, some of the LARP squad's being questioned, but not Wendy. You know, we learned earlier in an earlier episode that she's police, so she's not being questioned here. She's just relaxing with Jack. And she's trying to recruit him into their squad. Our man Jack's last line isn't, "I'm a swordsman, not a LARPer." It is,
"Oh, balls. I think I got some blood on my tie."
Yeah, disappointing. Clint and Kate are sitting on the bumper of an ambulance, finding a measure of relief. Clint decides to go for comic relief, tricking Kate into thinking he's giving her a compliment, and then he opts for praising Missy's costume handiwork. He does, however, manage to praise her, and most importantly, probably he tells her he's proud of her. You know, he's a father figure in this moment.
We gotta walk that dog.
Yeah, we do.
Next, we see a car driving in the snow toward a ranch house. Clint made it home. It's Christmas Day. He unpacks some gifts from the car and asks, you know, "Hey, are you coming?" He brought Kate. She brought the dog, no longer Pizza Dog, and now it's Lucky the dog. Clint assures Kate that they're going to be glad to see her. His family is going to be glad to see her, and they seem to be. They head inside. Laura gets to hug her hubby. Kate is welcomed, even part of the gift opening ceremonies. No gift, though, is any greater then the one Clint recovered with Kate's help. It's the Rolex. So he struck out with Jack, right? This, however, is a home run. Laura is Agent 19. The back of the watch has the SHIELD logo on it and a number 19 on it. She's probably Bobby Morse, or at least Mockingbird.
So if she's really called Laura, then she's at least Mockingbird, right? But maybe she was Bobby Morris and now she's Laura, or Bobby Morris was a code name. Hey, Tony Stark suggested so long ago she has to be an agent. Well, she was. That must be where she met Clint. He teases her, take better care of your stuff, and she teases him right back. Clint decides it's time to rid himself of his Ronin costume. He calls Kate outside with him, and they barbecue that costume. When it's on fire, they head back toward the house, and Kate tries coming up with a nickname for herself. Lady Hawk, Hawk Eve, Hawk Shot, Lady Arrow, and none of those are working for Clint. So Clint chimes in.
None of those.
Okay, fine.
You know what? Actually, I have an idea.
Immediately after he says that, an end title screen comes up, Hawkeye. I think the implication is clear, but they do not make it official. And that's it. Oh yeah, there is a mid credit scene. It's not part of the story, though. It's a gift from Marvel Studios to everyone who watched. It's the I Can Do This All Day musical number from Rogers the Musical in its entirety. Yeah, they filmed an entire musical number. And look, I'm not mad that they made that available. I just think we're used to getting a little more than that. We don't even get a Hawkeye will be back for her second season or anything. We don't get to see Sharon Carter, Val, or Yelena. We don't get to see Laura humming the song Mockingbird at the sink or doing something cool. We don't get to see the LARP group waiting for someone to come out of a door and it's Jack in comic book accurate swordsman costume. No. We don't get Jessica Walters meeting one of the bros like Ivan or Tomas in Lockup. Or how about a news story on a TV and it pans out and it's Aunt Moira coming home to a mess at her home? Or how about the same news story and it's Kamala Khan watching from her home in New Jersey? Honestly, this left me on a low note. This was an enjoyable, successful first season of Hawkeye. Maybe the only season. But whatever it was, it left me on a low note because there doesn't feel like there's anything continuing for me anymore. This feels like an abrupt end. And I just really didn't appreciate not having some kind of thread to tie this together to the next show. But what do you think? Email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com or interact on Twitter or Instagram @thewayphase4. Or on Facebook @thewayphase4. Our podcast's giveaway, courtesy of cufflinks.com, has concluded. We did not meet a minimum number of entries for the giveaway, so we will have to roll the items over, perhaps when coverage of Ms. Marvel begins. Maybe later. We apologize, but we have to have a number of qualified entries to hold a giveaway, and we didn't get that qualified number. Now, because of the way the show wraps up, I think we will continue our trend of not having a wrap-up show. Especially in light of nothing to look forward to, except what they announce. So this concludes our coverage of Marvel shows on Disney Plus for 2021. I still have Shang-Chi to recap and discuss. I think that's going to have to wait, though, until after our Star Wars coverage on This Is The Way podcast of The Book of Boba Fett. It's now less than a week away. I did see Spider-Man No Way Home. I loved it. I saw it on opening weekend, but I'm not sure if I should put out a review. I would want to discuss it without spoilers first, but that means I'd also have to forego using any audio since it's not available for home viewing yet. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to do that in an audio podcast format. So I'll keep an eye out for changes to the release schedule and try to bring you periodic updates until our next show coverage begins in 2022. You just listened to This Is The Way Phase 4's discussion of the Season 1 finale, Episode 6 of Hawkeye. Thank you. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.